Canuck Central. Satyar Shah with Vic Nizar coming to you live from Rogers Arena, the Kintec studio on the road. As always, get your thoughts into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox. Text in on the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street's Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progressway in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome. Details at DunbarLumber.com. There is a lot of reaction on the text inbox. Anytime we have Frank on, people have opinions and they have takes on some of the things going on around the league. And Frank mentioned the Canucks towards the end, as you would imagine, are active, calling around, and want to improve their blue line, which makes obvious sense. It's what we've been talking about ever since the offseason, really, that the Canucks couldn't solve all their issues in one offseason. Very few teams can. They did a lot. But we know that they're very active, that they're very aggressive, that they do anything they can to make improvements during the season. And that quest has already begun in earnest, it seems. The question just is, how many trade partners are willing and who is truly available? And that's why we had the exercise on the show last week, going through some situations around the league, imminent free agents, guys that have term left, younger players, older players. And there is you can find a bunch of players, but it's all projection because you don't know who is going to be available yet.
We were just talking before the show, just looking at the standings right now. There's 11 teams in the league with 500 records. And we usually say this every year. It does take 20 games for teams' plans to say, right, because that's, you know, at a stage where you're, you know, 20% of 25% of the season done, where teams look, our preseason plan didn't work. Now we have to start to rectify and actually try to salvage what we can here. But you're looking at a stage right now where the, you know, teams right now, they're 500. They're like, yeah, we're treading water. It's fine. It's no big deal. We don't need to make a panic move or anything like that. We're down to the, you know, 25th, 26th best team in the league that has a 500 record. So a lot of teams right now aren't motivated to try to move players themselves, even though we can logically look at this and say, you know, a team like Columbus, are they in a spot where they're really going to make the playoffs? You know, the Senators, are they going to make the playoffs? It looks like a struggle already, but these teams are going to have that sense of belief of, hey, we're 500 right now. We know about the November 1st stat. We know about American Thanksgiving. Teams just want to get to that stage and then start to explore what options are available to them.
Yeah, I would never put it past this front office to not make a deal at any point, but
you need
willing partners and time.
I mean, 100%.
You know, and that's something that obviously, you know, may take some time to come together still. All right, we'll get to more of your thoughts in the text inbox as the show goes on, but let's get to the Open.
Welcome to the Open.
Four! That's your home! Are you too good for your home? Answer me!
It is your destination for the latest news on the Vancouver Canucks. We'll get to the roundup coming up in a little bit. But the Canucks, they are on a four-game winning streak. They have, you know, really righted the ship after a pretty tough start to the season, the first three games. And I know somebody texted in and said, well, they've only beaten two teams so far. Well, the reality of the regular season is you got to beat the bad teams, and that's really what gets you ahead. And you just got to beat the average teams. And good teams, yeah, and they have a test tonight against the Carolina Hurricanes, who are on a winning streak of their own. They've been playing a lot better recently as well after, you know, losing their first game of the season pretty handily against the Tampa Bay Lightning. But since then, they've really played a lot better, and it's going to be a big test for the team. But the reason the Canucks have really picked it up the last few games is they're getting scoring contributions throughout their lineup. And to me, it creates a conversation about this management team, as we spoke about being aggressive and as Frank mentioned, calling around the league and seeing what defensemen may be available. They seem to have a very good eye for talent, especially finding players on value deals contributing, because a lot of this Canucks success recently is coming due to Kevin Lankinen, who's here making under $1 million. Daniel Sprong stepped into the lineup, had a good game. He's making under $1 million. Brännström, they talk about trying to improve the blue line. Well, the past few games when he's come in, he's added puck-moving ability to the blue line. They've spent less time in their own zone. He's been able to add a dimension they've lacked so far. He's making under $1 million. Then you have a guy like Kiefer Sherwood making $1.5 million, making a massive contribution already. And then you look at last year, or in the year before, they brought in guys like Suter, Joshua, Bluger, even signed Oman. Look at Baines, free agent signing. And I know Kuzmenko didn't work out long term, but he had a glorious one year in Vancouver and came in on a cheap deal and ended up moving him. Are they elite at finding affordable talent, or are they just on a heater? Because we know teams can make a lot of good moves, but not always keep that rate up throughout the years.
I think the final frontier in all these transactions would be, can you find someone that's in the ilk of, and the example a lot of people use would be like Verhaeghe and Duclair and how it worked for those teams.
Like somebody who's like a third, like a grade A contributor almost.
Yeah, I think that's the final frontier because they have done amazing work in the depth areas of this team. And you and I have discussed this a lot in the past that, you know, this management group, when they came in, they went after some, you know, mid-age guys that are like 23 and under, right? And part of that was there were so many empty draft classes. You just needed to backfill what was being missed here. Mm-hmm. So you didn't have this huge age gap that developed between your Pedersen, Hughes, and Miller group and Besser to your draft classes where it's going to be Lekkomäki and Willander. You had to fill in the gap somehow. And so they've gone about it with, you know, as you mentioned, all that huge list of guys, and you've managed to find some players that absolutely fit into the mold and the roles that you need. The one that I think, and why we get so many texts about him, is Sprong. That would have been the one that it's like, okay, you go get a Sprong, he fits into your top six, he goes plays with Pedersen, and you get this 23, 24 goal scorer in your top six, and finally they're really great at it. And I do think they're elite, but that final one to really say, hey, you might be the best in the league at this, is getting someone to contribute either in your top four or your top six. And that one just hasn't really happened yet. But you go through that, like that list was remarkable.
Well, and these are guys that are free agent signings. Yeah. I'm not even talking about, you know, the trades. I mean, Hronek, they gave up an asset to acquire, right? You can even, I went affordable guys making under $2 million. What do you think of Carson Soucy, 3.25 playing? And I know he hasn't had the best start to the year, but they found a player who's a top four defenseman, fringe top four guy, at worst 4 or 5, making $3 million. They projected that he would step into a role, and he did. Hronek, same thing, but he was a trade acquisition. Can they find one more guy? And I mean, like, DeBrusque
is the biggest whiff Curtis Lazar?
Probably. And they
managed to flip him.
They got a fifth-round pick out of
him. Yeah. So Their misses have been small, and they've been able to replenish it. Even something like
Mikheyev, I guess, would have been the biggest one, but he's a bigger signing.
No, but
a smaller signing.
Even something by acquisition like a Riley Stillman, they managed to flip that and to change it to something positive as well. So they've maneuvered very well, and their misses have been small. But generally speaking, they're really strong at finding all the pieces. Like Oman, I know it's like, what are we talking about, a ceiling here, but useful contributor at special teams.
Yeah, and I mean, because if you look at who's impressed you the most so far this season, it's probably somebody off this list, isn't it? Lankinen, Brännström, Sherwood. I mean, Sprong's only played three games.
It's got to be Lankinen.
It's Lankinen or Sherwood.
It's easily Lankinen number one, and then Sherwood's probably clean in number two alone.
And these guys are making under $2 million, 1.5, and that's part of the reason people are impressed, because you're talking guys who aren't getting paid a ton, and they're, you know, showing to be really big contributors. But if you're looking at guys that impress you the most, it's off that list. And I think that's what's, you know, been exciting about this year, that you found a couple of guys that are helping you out in a big way. And the Lankinen one to me is, you're right how massive it is.
He's already contributed 9 points. He's got all four wins, plus he had the OT loss, or the shootout loss. He's responsible for 9 points this season. Well, it's unbelievable.
And honestly, like, he's been good, but if you go through it, it's not like he's been, you know, spectacular either. I mean, he's done a really good job, and we talk about how he's had some bounces go his way as well. But you know what he hasn't done? He hasn't cost his team bad goals. He hasn't cost the Canucks a win. And when you have that, I think that gives the team confidence too. I think even with Shilovs, with the roster this team has, they would still be competitive. But I think having the confidence of feeling good about your goaltending, that I think is immeasurable for a team that's already of a pretty high quality. And I think, you know, based on what we're hearing from the head coach too, like, he's pretty much the starting goaltender right now. Like, he's getting the game against Carolina. We know Shilovs will get in soon. You can't have him just sitting around and not playing any games. But it really looks like he's got a stranglehold on the position already.
Marty the Realtor, 650-650. The previous regime used to bring in random players that had previous pedigree. This regime is focused on filling holes on value deals, building a team. What a novel concept. That's from Marty the Realtor. And look, there is still a focus on pedigree, like Brännström. That's a first-round pedigree. You know, Curtis Lazar, that was a huge pedigree as well. There is still pedigree focused in on this, but you know, they've mentioned in the past reclamation projects, right? Finding the right value. To Marty's point there in the text, finding players in unique situations, and can they bring more out of it? Even someone like Lankinen, again, I'll just go back to it's like he had a 918 save percentage in his season. It's like you start achieving that and you start showing the signs that you are a credible at least platoon goalie. It's stunning to me that he was available as long as he was,
yeah.
and that he found this spot, and then the Canucks, you know, focused on finding this guy as well, that he was high on their list. It just took time for Lankinen to sort through the summer and pick his spot, but that's another great, you know, situational awareness of targeting a player.
Well, and I think having an identity as a team and knowing exactly what you are and who to target makes it
and where
a lot
to spend
more
the money.
Narrow. Exactly, right? And as far as not having to overspend on guys playing roles that are playing that role players for you, you can't overspend on those things. We were seeing that. And on Sherwood to me is exciting. And, you know, we talked about this before he even played a game for the Canucks and why we like this signing so much. He's already shown to be an everyday NHL player. He's already shown to be a player that can make a difference in the postseason as well. Plus, there's untapped potential when you look at his profile, what he's done in the past, and his overall skill set. And we're seeing that already. And as much as I'm excited about Brännström, and I am excited about Daniel Sprong, I do think we have to have a level of pump the brakes a little bit, because unlike Lankinen, you mentioned a track record. He was a legitimate starter in the NHL, right? Maybe not for a good team with Chicago, but he was a legitimate starter. He's played how many NHL starts he had? He has 117. He had 112 NHL games played before playing for the Canucks. As a goaltender, that's a significant amount of games. Brännström has never been a top four defenseman or played top 4 minutes. Daniel Sprong has never been a top six forward. They have nice skill sets. They can do certain things really well. But I think we have to pump the brakes on giving them far more than what they've already done. Like, I think maybe at some point this season, Brännström can play 17, 18 minutes a game or perhaps even have a bigger role on this squad. I'm not sure I want to put him into that position just because he's played well the first 4 or 5 games. And same thing with Daniel Sprong. He's been in and out of the lineup, had a great game last game around. But nurture them in these spots. Let them truly grow and gain confidence and become the reliable two-way players you want them to be, and then promote them up the lineup. Because I don't want to see, you know, all of a sudden people thinking or the team thinking these guys have figured it out, throw them to the Wolves, and then they struggle again. Now we're back to square one. Like, build these guys up, and much like Hoglander, much like the guys we saw last year, once they're ready for it, now you can give them that spot. It's almost like recalling a player, a prospect. You want him to stay. I want these guys to be able to stick in a bigger role, not yo-yo back and forth between, hey, tonight you're playing 17 minutes and tomorrow you're out of the lineup because you struggled.
It's so funny, too, because I'll use that word pedigree that Marty, the realtor, texted in about 650-650, because a player like Brännström, pedigree is what got him over 19 minutes a game in a season with Ottawa one season. Not too long ago. I think that was the 22-23 season. But they made an investment in him based on the Mark Stone trade, and they say, you know what, we kind of need this first round to work out.
Yeah.
His pedigree will determine our usage on him. Now, seasons removed, yeah, you still have first-round pedigree, and you were evaluated at some stage. But now Brännström is in the earn-it stage of his career. And here in Vancouver, yeah, it's been a very encouraging start here through 4 games, and he's, you know, topped out at just over 14 minutes in a game, but he's averaging 13.5. That's a big gap between 19 of this team has to throw a guy in the water and let's see if you sink or swim to where you are now in Vancouver. Say, yeah, cool, you got some pedigree, but you need to earn every promotion that you're going to get from us and get to a stage where we can rely on you at 17 minutes a night.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's real potential for one or both of those guys to become that. I'm just not sure we're there yet with them, but very exciting with what they've done, especially last game for both those players. All right, let's get to the Canucks Central roundup. Lankinen starts again, like we mentioned, against the Carolina Hurricanes, but Tocca did mention Shelob's in next game or soon, does not want him to sit out much longer. You would expect Shelob's to probably play one of the next 2 games. You don't want it to be. You don't want over like 2 weeks between starts in the NHL for a guy,
well,
especially
right now,
a guy you're trying to build up to.
It's 13 days now.
Yeah, I mean it's gonna be over 2 weeks already.
Yeah.
You want it to be, you know, closer to 3 weeks at that point. I think you're at, almost at a stage where you have to bring him in. But what if Lankinen has a shutout, for instance,
or
right?
Even winning. Like it was a conversation we were having on Saturday night, right? It's. They've had the realization that, you know what, the usage on our star goalie, it probably needs to change, and results are ultimately going to dictate things. It's the allure. I don't blame him, but here's Lankinen, 4 wins in a row. If he wins tonight, a big opponent on Wednesday, the Hughes Bowl. You're going to go, hey, this goalie that's been cold for over 2 weeks, we're just going to throw him in when you have San Jose and Anaheim on the horizon here.
Maybe it's too easy to just go to you. Like, you've already sat out 2 weeks. Let's just play in California.
Yeah, let's just roll it over, and we'll get a chance on Saturday to see what you have there.
But first things first, the win tonight, right?
Yeah,
let's see what we. But even so, like,
ultimately, coaches are always going to come down to, it's like, I'm going to take a guy that's got four in a row. Screw you, Sid. Like, who cares? It's just what happens. Like,
Well, that's what you see sometimes. You know, coaches will talk about how, like, hey, I really wanted to get my backup starts, but it just didn't happen. Like,
that's why I mentioned the Chicago game, though, is Lankanen was coming off the shutout. So, well, if you go into Philly, or sorry, he got the shutout in Philly.
Yes.
And it's like, well, do you just put Chilovs in on game Chicago?
You can't after a shutout.
But that's the thing. It's now you've made that decision then. It was like, well, he just got a shutout. Let's roll it over to three. And he wins that one. It's like, well, we got Pittsburgh and Crosby coming to town. He's won three in a row. We may as well pull Lankanen again. It's just so easy to get caught in the snowball of it of, hey, let's manage the usage, but let's also be considerate of results. It can flip so fast, and suddenly now Chilovs is looking at 2 weeks of not playing.
That's what happens. The goalie gets hot. You get on a win streak. It's going to be hard to get back in. So we'll see what happens with Chilovs, but Lankanen, obviously, a foothold as a starter with the team. As far as the defensive lineup goes, Juulsen might get in based on what Talk had said, maybe considering a change. Derek Forbort, who sadly went through the passing of his father. That's why he was away from the team, and we wish him and his family all the best going through a heartbreaking situation. He did return to the team. He's not quite ready to play yet. You know, he's been away for a little while. Probably has to get his conditioning back again, so I'm not sure he's playing tonight, or we'll see if he gets in on Wednesday. But maybe Noah Juulsen, based on what the head coach said. Another Canucks defender, you mentioned a prospect that the Canucks are banking on to play a significant role for them at some point, is Tom Willander, the 11th overall pick from a couple of years ago. He was named the Hockey East Defender of the Week, and so far in six games with BU, he has 2 goals, 3 assists, and is a +4. So, you know, he's a player who we're kind of wondering, year two, gone to the NCAA, how much better can he get? What kind of impact can he make? Can he make some bigger strides as far as his puck skills go? Only six games in, but it seems like he's off to a great start.
That's a huge encouraging sign, right? You want to see a offensive development, because as much as he's a defensive D-man, and we always chat about player styles, what are you and how consistent are you at that, you do want to see a certain level of offensive involvement from Tom Willander. So that level of contribution is huge, again, at the NCAA level, but nevertheless, you know, he's in a battle there for offensive opportunities there, but a nice sign that he's got 5 points here.
Well, and we know that his skating is incredible, and his overall puck handling can get better. There was a clip I saw, he put a forward on his butt with his skating. I mean, the guy has incredible edge work. He's super powerful. But the stick handling's coming a long way as well. Like, some of the stuff that he's doing to some of these defenders, some of these forwards trying to play him in the offensive zone is pretty exciting. Like, that skating is really plus-plus. I mean, the kid's pretty exciting. We'll see how he puts it together, but good start for him so far in the NCAA. And another piece of news relating to the Carolina Hurricanes, their big defenseman, Brent Burns. Well, he had quite the McDonald's escapade, according to Dan Murphy. Sportsnet Murph on Twitter tweeted out a thread about what happened to the Carolina Hurricanes, who had mechanical problems with their plane in Seattle. So they couldn't fly out, so they had to drive to Vancouver from Seattle taking a bus. So run us through this, Vic. Brent Burns took it upon himself to feed his teammates McDonald's on the way home, but it wasn't so simple, was it?
So if you wanted to know about the diets of athletes and how perfect it is sometimes it's just a large order through the drive-thru window. Yeah, this is per Murph that on the McDonald's app, he placed a huge order. And the rumor was it was upwards of 100 cheeseburgers. So the Hurricanes aren't necessarily coming in with the perfect diet on their way in. It's fast food sometimes. Now, this has happened before. You know, the Canucks had the incident at the airport, and they were chowing down on, I think the report was Panda Express.
They had Panda Express at the at the airport.
But not necessarily the most optimal post-game meal for the Carolina Hurricanes.
Look, sometimes all you need is sustenance.
Yeah.
And I know that all too
well. They're burning calories. They'll be fine.
For those guys, it's fine. But could you imagine?
That was 2 days ago.
Could you imagine, though, Brent Burns coming knocking on your window of your car at midnight?
So what happened was, the McDonald's drive-thru, like the bus couldn't get through.
Yeah, so and they wouldn't let him walk through. Yeah.
It was the midnight, so the regular restaurant is closed. And so Brent Burns tried walking through the drive-thru and was told by the McDonald's employee, you need to be in a car, which I believe is policy. As someone that's tried to do that.
No, I know. I've done that. I've tried to do that as well.
I've tried to do that. you know, as it would happen after midnight as well. I don't know why I was there after midnight.
Usually, if you're in that type of situation, you're in a certain type of state of mind, and that's usually late at night.
Brent Burns jumped in a car with a passerby who was happy to assist.
Yeah, so that's Brent Burns looking out for his teammates, making sure they all eat food. And he mentioned, Murph, that usually that's not something that Brent Burns eats. He's on quite a lean diet, and venison is something he has quite a bit of apparently. So, that's Brent Burns and the Carolina Hurricanes and the situation they found themselves in after their flight couldn't make it out of Seattle to Vancouver for the final game of their six-game road trip here in Vancouver tonight against the Canucks. And they've won 4 out of 5 games so far on this road trip and are trying to make it 5 out of 6. And we'll see if they can do that here tonight against the Canucks. All right, that is the Canucks Central Roundup. It's a roundup. It's Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar. We are going to chat to our good friend Don Taylor from Donnie and Dolly. That's next on Sportsnet 650.
Hitting the most important topics for Vancouver sports fans. The People's Show with Bick Nizar. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.